This is the Web Strategies Podcast, a program dedicated to the technology and techniques of marketing your business on the internet.
Hi, it's Tom Anthony, the Web Strategies Podcast, and okay, been a busy week for me personally. The company I work for launched a major new website this week. In fact, I just got back to where our office is in Chesapeake, Virginia, kind of between Norfolk and Virginia Beach. And the client is OBX.com. And in this part of the country, OBX is very instantly recognized as Outer Banks, and it's a resort area in North Carolina. So I just got back from the grand unveiling of the new website, OBX.com. The site owner sponsored a Chamber of Commerce get-together, the monthly meeting that they have. And nice time. Met a lot of great people from the Outer Banks, and we had a lot of very positive feedback about OBX.com. And if you get a chance, check it out. I'm really proud of the kind of website that turned out to be. So this is obviously the topical part of the program, and then we'll have a great interview today. We talked to management consultant and author Lanny Goodman about the relationship between technology and strategy. And Lanny is the founder and CEO of Management Technologies Incorporated in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And in our show extra section after the interview, we'll be talking about, get this, the diffusion of innovations. And as an example, we'll discuss how easy it is now to use video to market your business. So, and I also want to thank you again for your interest and your support. The Web Strategies Podcast, a lot of activity on iTunes and several reviews. Thank you very much for taking the time to review us. We really do appreciate it. And if you get a chance, we hope you'll go to iTunes and the Web Strategies Podcast main listing and give us a review. So in just a moment, we'll have the main segment of our program begin. It's my conversation with Lanny Goodman of Management Technologies. But first, a word from our sponsor, WebTex, who has been our sponsor from the very first Web Strategies Podcast. Thank you so much.
The Web Strategies Podcast is sponsored by WebTex, the consulting and e-business solutions firm. On the web at www.webtex.com. WebTex.
Starting out the main segment, we are very pleased to be able to be on the phone right now with Lanny Goodman, who is President and CEO of Management Technologies in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And, of course, the proprietor, so to speak, of LannyGoodman.com, and also an advanced author with a book coming out called The End of Management. And there's a long kind of subtitle to that Lanny, I'll ask you about in a second. But first, hi, and thanks for coming on the Web Strategies Podcast.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Tom.
So first I wanted to ask you about the rest of the title of the book, and then let's talk a little bit about your background, and then I want to go into another area of our discussion. But so what is the actual title of the book?
Yeah, it's The End of Management. Have more time, make more money, and have more fun by creating a company that runs itself.
I want that.
Most entrepreneurs do.
And that is soon to be available on Amazon.com, is that right?
Yeah, and it'll be available through my site as well. It'll be out in a couple of months, probably.
Excellent. Well, before we get into the main part of the discussion, you and I were talking just a little bit before the program about your blog, which is at LannyGoodman.com. And it was, I wouldn't use the word bizarre, I guess it's an odd coincidence maybe, but in reading the text of your blog, the thoughts that you were putting out are exactly precisely what this podcast is about. And of course, we know you through our company that sponsors the program, WebTex. And I thought it would be a great thing for our audience if you can give us just a little bit about your background.
Sure. I've been self-employed all my adult life, started and sold two small manufacturing companies, and then in 1980 got involved in doing consulting work through some friends of mine who had developed a personality assessment tool, a very powerful tool, which I used extensively for many, many years. And but in the course of working with a wide variety of companies, both top management of Fortune 500s to a lot of smaller, more entrepreneurial, closely held companies. What I found was that often a lot of the organizational, technically one would say organization development work that was going on, team building, communication enhancement, conflict resolution, on and on, their whole panoply of skills and techniques of organization development. But these were, largely band-aids that leaders and managers were trying to put on problems that had much deeper roots. And so I began really trying to understand at a deeper level what was really going on, a number of things that I'd observed. One, I had a colleague who was kind of a mentor of mine when I was first starting out. He had been an internal consultant for many years at TRW and many of their divisions. And he shared with me an insight, which I thought was important, and that is that highly politicized organizations tend to be places where the stakes are very small. And so the obvious corollary to that is that if you want to reduce the politicization, if you will, of an organization, the backstabbing and gossip and, just the kind of negativity that organizations can get into, that the appropriate response is to raise the bar. And what I've certainly learned and been reinforced many times over the years is you take a bunch of bright, hardworking, ambitious people, lock them in a room without very much to do, and they just chew on each other, just largely for entertainment. For something to do. And so it seemed to me the strategic planning process was severely underutilized and poorly utilized, if done at all, in companies. And so I set about to develop a comprehensive strategic planning process to really help companies, particularly entrepreneurial firms, get clear about where they were headed, what they really wanted to try and accomplish. Because from my peculiar point of view, it seems to me what really makes us unique as human beings is that we have this godlike ability to create something where nothing existed before. The problem is, we all know from experience that we're not very efficient at it. It takes, just a stupid amount of effort to get the simplest thing done in business, it seems. And so the question is, how do we get really efficient at turning dreams into realities? So that's really how I got started in developing my consulting practice, and particularly found that I really didn't like big companies very much and really refocused my practice on closely held entrepreneurial companies, and found that a lot of entrepreneurs, when they get to midlife, really wind up being trapped in their own companies, that they are continuing to run their companies the way they did in the early years and long after they really could and should be functioning in a much more strategic kind of way. So I basically built my strategic planning methodology around helping entrepreneurs really get very clear about what they needed and wanted out of their lives and to recognize their companies were really a vehicle, a means to that end, that their companies really should be working for them rather than they're working for their companies. And so that's how that evolved. And then about 15 years ago, when the science of complexity theory, which had sort of evolved out of chaos theory, showed up and brought with it the insight that all systems in the world that we can observe have a natural propensity to self-organize, then I felt like I'd been hit over the head by a 2x4. And when you consider that basically management, the whole discipline of management, in a lot of respects is designed to prevent self-organizing behavior because we don't trust that people will self-organize in the right ways to do the right things. And so I began researching intensely with my clients over a 15-year period, how might we design and build organizations that basically were self-managing and ran themselves, which would free up huge bandwidth for the CEO to basically do those things that he or she could uniquely do for the company to help move it forward strategically, and also to have more time for their personal pursuits and their families, who often get neglected by entrepreneurs just because of the demands of running an entrepreneurial company in the traditional ways. So that's a bit of my background. I've been very close to technology really since the beginning of my consulting career and even before. I remember when Lockheed Dialog databases came out, you had to use a 300 baud dial-up modem, and everything was very crude and primitive by today's standards, but the access to information that gave us was just blew me away, and it was clear that was the way of the future. And I've had personal computers around since the very early 80s, and so I've followed technology very closely, and I think it's a critical strategic issue. I think one that really represents a serious challenge for a lot of CEOs of my generation who are not very close to technology, never quite got it, and have often failed to really understand how critically important it is to designing and running any kind of organization today.
I can really relate to a lot of the description that you just had in terms of having been around for the history of the development of this, the internet and web technologies, but really with having your particular focus be on the business part of that. And then truly that's what this podcast is all about. So what would you say to a business owner or to perhaps someone that's very high up in an organization that would be in charge of dealing with where technology and business meets? What would you say would be a good starting point to start to understand what the, not how it's done, but how to apply the existing technology to any particular business?
Well, a couple of maybe seem like random thoughts, but let me see if we can kind of tie them together. But for one thing, back in the early 80s when the IBM PCs first came out, I found myself doing quite a lot of computer-related consulting because I would, show up at a company to do some other work, and, here are three or four shiny new IBM PCs, sitting on people's desk that, employees are staring at in horror. All I know is that the boss just spent, $10,000 and wants all kinds of stuff to happen. And, they were completely clueless. They had no idea where to even begin. And often, the client would say, listen, we've got these new personal computers. I expect we're going to be able to lay off two employees. And usually my response would be, well, chances are actually you're going to have to hire two additional employees. Which of course was not great news to them. But I said, the thing you need to understand about technology is it's very labor intensive. So it isn't the time saving that is necessarily the issue, at least at the early part of a computer implementation. The real value in the computer is that it allows you to do things that you simply cannot do any other way. To me, the paradigm or the archetype really of that reality is Walmart. If you've ever been to Bentonville, Arkansas, their IT center is a concrete cube about seven stories on a side. There are no windows. It is a bunker. And that is the company. Walmart could not exist without technology. If it could, I think it's self-evident. If it could have existed, it would have existed before the advent of technology. But it's just way too large, way too complex for mere, mortal human beings to track and keep track of and stay on top of the unthinkably large number of SKUs, just quantities, inventory, real estate, and finance, you name it, pick a dimension of the organization. I mean, it got over a million employees. I mean, how could you even keep track of payroll for an organization of that magnitude without technology? It just couldn't possibly be done. So I think, that really brings home the notion that technology is really about doing things that can't be done any other way. And that's really how I think leaders of companies really need to think about technology. Now, the other thing, the sort of corollary issue there, is that technology is a tool. And my experience in dealing with a lot of different kinds of people, there are people who just get tools, and there are people who just don't. There are people who, if you handed them, you know, an exotic tool from a machine shop or, you know, a jewelry manufacturing or a surgical instrument of some kind, whatever, they'll look at it, they'll hold it, they'll move it this way, that way. You can just see the gears turning in their mind as they can envision how might such a tool be used, what might it be used for, and they just have the capacity to put those pieces together in their mind and really get what that tool is, what it's for, how it extends human capabilities. And there are other people who would stare at it like it was an inanimate lump and you know, just never be able to put the pieces together. Now, you know, those people will have other talents, you know, to compensate. So I'm not trying to make any judgment here one way or the other. But I think it's really important for a business leader to be brutally honest with him or herself to say, look, do you really get technology or not? You know, you don't have to be a gearhead. You don't have to be in love with bits and bytes. You know, you don't have to, you know the difference between, you know, a DNS server and, you know, a Samba server. You know, it's not the point. You can hire the talent that, you know, lays awake at night dreaming about, you know, data packets. And, you know, you don't have to have that level of technological knowledge. What you have to have is an ability to grasp what the tools can be and do, and also an interest in how it's all evolving, because it is moving, you know, just absurdly fast. Like the guy who started Facebook, you know, 23-year-old billionaire, for Pete's sake. I mean, that's just absurd when you think about it, but it really tells you, you know, how fast things are happening in the technology world and how fast things are changing. I was reading an article just last night that the out of CERN, you know, the research center in Switzerland where actually the web was invented, they are building a fiber optic internet to help, because they're just finishing the massive super collider, and the data that's going to generate is so massive that they have to spread it all over the world to universities all over the world in order to have any hope of getting any value out of it. And in order to do that, the internet was just hopelessly slow. So they built this massive fiber optic infrastructure, which would have the capacity, if you had it plugged into your house, of downloading a feature movie in about 2 seconds, as opposed to 3+ hours on the internet, even with a T1. So, you know, this is the kind of stuff that's over the horizon. And if we're not thinking about paying attention to it, I mean, things like multiplayer, online games. There is a multiplayer online game out there now that has 110 million members worldwide. Now, you know, if you're in the widget business or the parking meter business or whatever, you know, okay, how is that relevant to me? Well, you know, don't know. It may not be, but you certainly cannot ignore that it means something. What does it mean? Hard to say, but it's, you know, we sure as heck need to be paying attention to these things. Facebook, MySpace. MySpace gets more traffic today than Google. You know, what does that mean, you know, for a widget maker or a bank or whatever? Who knows? But you can't ignore it. It's another data point that needs to be enriching the fabric of your understanding of what's going on in the world around you. Because the biggest risk in any business climate and environment when things are changing as fast as they are is that our business winds up in some evolutionary dead end. some box canyon that we've wandered down, thinking that it was, the path to prosperity, only to slam against a stone wall at the end of the canyon. Because not necessarily because we were doing anything wrong, but because the ecosystem in which we work, our marketplace, our industry, the world of technology has morphed around us faster than we could see and observe it. Backing out of an evolutionary dead end as a business is a very painful and expensive proposition. And for the smaller firm in particular, it can be lethal. So, the one of the blind spots I find in leadership of companies is that they keep themselves busy, busy, busy. And as you, I'm sure, remember from a recent blog post that I put up, we have this ethos of in the culture of business in America of lead by example, which I think is deadly. If lead by example means we've got to be busy, 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 so our employees don't get the impression that somehow it's okay to slack off, but the problem is the CEO's job of a company is very different from anybody else's. The CEO's job is to be thinking about the things we've been talking about, to be looking over the horizon, to be exploring, to be talking to industry experts, to be going to conferences, to really putting the parts and pieces together in some orderly way that gives them a sense of, what this crazy quilt jigsaw puzzle of the modern world really looks like, and what impact it might have on their business. Because, when we're busy, 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 buried down in the trees, very easy to wake up and discover that our corner of the forest is actually on fire and we didn't realize it. So I think, all of these sort of seemingly random thoughts, I guess, to really weave them together. If you are a CEO or a leader of a company, and you really don't have a good feel for technology, it is essential that you team yourself up with somebody who does. And to pick their brains and listen and explore with them. Let them share their thoughts and ideas. And then obviously any prudent leader who has to rely on that kind of input from somebody else, you're going to validate that. You're going to talk to multiple people and get multiple opinions. If you do have a good feel for technology, then obviously, design process of any technological infrastructure really starts with, always, as is true of every design process, is defining the function. Because form follows function. And if you're not clear about what it is you're trying to do, then, it's whatever you put together is going to be a kludge by definition. The nature of great design is that you will never look at it, whether it's a beautiful high performance automobile, a piece of software, a fabulous ballet, a great piece of artwork. You will never find yourself looking at it, scratching your head, saying, "Gee, I wonder why they did that over there," because there is never anything arbitrary about great design. And the reason there's never anything arbitrary about it is because the designer has really peeled the onion on the design problem and has understood it at a very deep level. And everything that flows from that understanding integrates that product in a very deep way so that it just rings like a bell. You couldn't add anything to it, couldn't take anything away from it. And, that absolutely holds true with any kind of technological effort, whether it's putting up a website or building an intranet or, basically even, the infrastructure architecture of how people are connected together and what tools they use to do their work. And technology has become so pervasive and so multifaceted, from groupware and tools for helping people focus and organize and communicate to e-commerce and on and on and on. I mean, the explosion of creativity that has started in the late 70s, early 80s, is absolutely roaring along unabated. So again, I think the starting point really is to be clear about one's own strengths and limitations as a leader, and then, you know, and even if you are knowledgeable, you really owe it to yourself to get out and hear what other people are doing, what other people are saying. It's so easy in the sort of busyness of feeling like you've got to lead by example and run around and, you know, sort of set the pace, to deny yourself the opportunity to look outward as opposed to, you know, looking inward as the leader of a company, and really get out and get exposed to new relationships, new ideas, and put teams of people together if you need to really brainstorm, you know, where is the industry headed? What tools are starting to peek over the horizon that are germane for our industry? What might we be doing with these? And the other thing that's critical, like any other change in an organization, is you've got to be willing to run experiments and try new things, and to trust that you're going to run into resistance internally in your organization. And in some cases, you really have to isolate the experiments that you're running and run them as sort of pilot projects to prevent their being squashed by the inertia of your own organization. And as they demonstrate their credibility and gain a toehold, then you can begin to drive them into your organization. But these are things that take acts of leadership, you know, willingness to put a stake in the ground and say, no, this is what we're going to do because this is how we're going to remain relevant to the economic process of the future. Because from my standpoint, that is ultimately the challenge we face. It's not how do we succeed in the future, it's how do we remain relevant to the future. And for those of us, you know, who grew up with technology, from its infancy, you know, it's really critical to be aware of the fact that the young entrepreneurs of today, you know, they can't remember a time when there was not a personal computer in their home. And they have a relationship with technology that those of us who are a bit older do not and never will. And they will see things because of that, that we have to work harder to see. We can't ever forget that.
You know, I have no idea why you thought that was a bunch of random thoughts, because as I was paying attention to where you were going in our conversation, it was razor sharp, and it was just a large number of great points. If you were to give the listener three bullet point things to put on their action list to be better prepared for the technology in the business world, whether at whatever level of comfort that they're at, what would those three bullet points be?
One bullet point is team up with somebody outside your organization who understands both business and technology. And that may sound like a completely self-serving comment for this podcast and for WebTex, but you know, I have a long-term relationship with WebTex precisely for that reason. While I don't consider myself technical in a very specific sense of the term, I certainly understand technology strategically, but without a technical partner who also understands business, which very few technologists do, it would be my knowledge and insight would not be of very much value. Even if you have an organization with internal IT people, I think it's all the more important that you have an outside technology partner to balance and potentially challenge the views of your internal people, who, after all, are part of the organizational inertia that every organization has, and they're going to have their own biases and points of view, and may be, because of that, less willing to adapt and change than the marketplace may, in fact, demand and require. So that is one thing that I think is critical. Second thing is to get out and go to industry trade shows and so forth, the things that, you know, a good CEO should be doing anyway. And but really go to those workshops and so forth that have to do with technology to really find out, you know, what other people are doing. You know, the whole trade association phenomenon, people tend to take for granted, but it's an completely extraordinary dimension to our economy. I mean, if you think about it, here are companies that compete tooth and nail all year long, and then they all get together once a year to share with each other what they've done. I mean, it's completely amazing. And very few other countries have this kind of co-opetition, if you will, you know, forgive the term, where there is an implicit understanding of the value of cross-fertilization, even amongst competitors. And so these trade association meetings can be really valuable. And if they're not being really valuable, then, you know, as a member of your trade association, put some pressure on the leadership of the association to make them more relevant and germane for the 21st century. Third thing I would do is subscribe to trade association, not trade association, but technology trade publications. Information Week, InfoWorld, you know, these are publications which are relatively technical, but they're really not just for CIO technoids. They are because they often really address things from a broad business point of view. And it can be overwhelming at times. I know, and I've read these for many, many years, but, you know, if I get busy and I miss a week, then the week following, the writers are talking about stuff and using acronyms that I've never even heard before. So it can be daunting when you realize how fast these things show up. But at the same time, they, again, will enrich the tapestry, if you will, or the jigsaw puzzle of your understanding of what's going on in the world around you. How does this stuff translate to ROI? Well, you know, it's one of the things we've learned in the information age is that the strategies of our, you know, fathers, you know, the strategy was if you had knowledge, you held it close to the vest because that was knowledge was power. And today what we've learned in the information age is that knowledge is only of value if it's, you know, to the extent that it's spread around. And we know that because we know that when people and information are put together, good things happen. And it's very difficult to nail down the ROI much more specifically than that. But if you have any interest in technology at all, then staying abreast of, you know, the emerging technologies, what's going on, and again, to be able to get a sense of how these parts and pieces fit together is really important. If you have no tolerance for it, no talent for it, no interest in it, then all the more reason that it's critical that you build a team of people, whether it's a task force in your company, of people who are interested and fascinated and passionate about technology, and or teaming with an outsider as well, which, again, as I would encourage. But somehow that work's got to get done.
Well, I tell you, I can see right now that if you'd be willing to, you're a guest that I would love to have back on the podcast, and certainly more than once. I don't even know where that time flew by, but what a fascinating philosophy that you have and a way of looking at the business part of technology, the strategic part of technology. So, Lanny, I wanted to thank you very much for being on the Web Strategies podcast and give you a little bit of a plug here again. Your website is LannyGoodman.com, and we will have, of course, a link to your website blog in our show notes on our own website for the podcast. And also wanted to ask you to please let me know as soon as the book is available so we can put a link up to that as well. So once again, Lanny, thank you so much for being on our show.
It's a pleasure, Tom. Anytime. I think you can see that I've got opinions on most things, and I'm happy to share them.
Well, we're going to come back for them again. Thank you again.
You bet.
Okay, so now it's time for the podcast extra, and I wrote an accompanying article in our official website, which would be www.webstrategiespodcast.com. I hope you'll visit the site just to get additional background on the podcasts in general, and if you want more information about today's podcast, which is Web Strategies Podcast number 3. There's an adoption acceptance curve for all technology. Everett M. Rogers, in his 1962 book, The Diffusion of Innovations, theorized that innovations would spread through society in an S-curve. As the early adopters select the technology first, followed by the majority, until a technology or an innovation is common. And while there are lots of exceptions to that, generally the theory holds up. It's innovators, early adopters, early majority, late majority, and, not my word, it's from the book, laggards. I'd like to feel like I fell into the first bucket of innovator, and it's not a brag, really. It's just letting you know, in the context of my comments, video on the internet, more or less, was invented by Real Networks in February of 1997. And in the same year, in 1997, I produced for the internet a video clip of Joe Cipriano, who is one of my most loyal customers. And Joe and I have a relationship that really goes back to before I even got into the internet business. But anyway, I had the video of Joe doing a commercial, a promo, they call it, for The Simpsons on Fox TV way back in 1997. And as far as I know, and I really, really believe this, this was the first use of video as a promotional vehicle for television announcers on the internet. Now you see them all the time. In fact, a guy that Joe knows pretty well, and I can prove it, they've seen pictured together, is Don LaFontaine. And he's the guy that you see in the Geico commercials that is the movie announcer type that says somewhere. But anyway, and Joe, by the way, I have to let you know that he did me a terrific service and favor, and he did the new voicing of the open and close of the program, which I have not produced yet, but I promise next time out you'll hear a brand new open and close featuring the voice of Joe Cipriano. Back in 1997, the promo that I did with Joe Cipriano on his website for The Simpsons, basically there was a version that was for broadband, meaning 56K at the time, and then there was a low-band one, 14.4K. If you remember that far back, a 14.4 modem, and the video was really just a slideshow with sound. And we'll compare that to the other day when I walked in and saw my wife and her mom looking at our grandbaby in a video from YouTube. It's so commonplace now that a grandmother and a great-grandmother are very comfortable using YouTube to watch a home movie. Now, if it's that well adopted in the home, my point is that if the theory of the diffusion of innovations has any validity, well, if you're not using video on the internet for your business, you will soon become a minority, and it's tough to catch up. I have a few sample videos on the website, www.webstrategiespodcast.com, and I hope you'll visit and enjoy seeing the face behind the voice, so to speak, by taking a look at a video clip I have of Joe Cipriano up there, which is actually coming from YouTube and helps illustrate the point that I just made. Next time out, we'll talk about the technology and techniques of marketing your business on the internet. So for now, for the Web Strategies Podcast, I'm Tom Anthony. Thanks for listening.